a matter of time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the 2009 Zack Snyder film Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash.
My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
And I'm Eric Deutsch from Flash Gordon Minute.
Hey, welcome, Eric. How you doing?
Very good. Very excited to be on with you guys.
Yeah.
Excited
to have you. I was actually on your guys' show, you and Brad, a little while back. And
yep, we've had both of you guys on in separate weeks.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah. I feel like, Eric, I feel like you were on pretty early, weren't you?
Yeah, in the 20s, I think.
Yeah, I think Eric had the week when they take off in the rocket ship and first, enter the vortex near the beginning of the movie.
Okay, so this is minute 106 here in week 22 on Monday. And it starts with Rorschach explaining what happens to dogs and ends with the prison psychiatrist unable to help. Do all dogs go to heaven?
All dogs get put down.
Ooh, yeah.
Love that line.
Yeah. I wanted that being an alternate title for that movie, the All Dogs Get Put Down. It just pops more, don't you think? Guess it didn't test well with the 11 to 12-year-old audience.
You get a bunch of crying kids that way. And some adults do.
Yeah. Sure. It's a hell of a way to kick off the week here with a great line and then a series of cleaver chops to this guy's head.
Yeah, the way that he drives the axe into the killer over and over and over again. I mean, he's doing more than killing him. He's butchering him. You know, he's defacing him, making the body unfit for, you know, any kind of, you know, open coffin burial. This is more than just killing here.
Yeah, that's essentially what I was going to say was, I mean, just what's happening to the head there is the skull and flesh and whatever, the brain matter.
Yeah, it's pretty upsetting how much they show. I mean, and they do a nice artful way of it mostly being in like a side profile silhouette kind of view, but there's still like a flap of skin that kind of falls forward off of Gerald's face that it's, like I said, it's pretty upsetting. In the theatrical, it goes like two chops into the head or into the skull, and then it pans up and the frame just stays on Rorschach. And so you just see Rorschach's face and then his arm chopping down out of frame. So it's essentially the same scene. They've just cropped it differently. So here
that's interesting.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, other than maybe the dream about the nuclear war that explodes Dan and Laurie, this might be the most brutal. Well, hold on. There's the guy with the arms getting chopped off in the jail. maybe not.
So did you guys count the number of hacks?
I didn't.
I didn't know.
I got like 8 or 9.
Okay.
Wow.
Man, tenderized. Yeah.
Well, and I have a feeling it goes on after that too. You know,
yeah. That's just when they cut away. Guy probably didn't have a head when Rorschach was done with him.
Yeah. Did you ever see first season of Daredevil?
Yeah.
With the Kingpin, as he has a member of his team that upsets him, and he, you know, slams their head in the car door. It's a lot like that, probably. Just not much left once he was done.
Or very, you know, Negan-like from The Walking Dead.
Mm. I was thinking about that, too.
Yeah.
In the Art of the Film book, there's a prop of this cleaver that Rorschach uses, and it looks totally normal, except there's a big cutout, like a big rounded, you know, skull shape cutout missing from the blade. So I'm guessing that's for the moment that we see him like face on Gerald when the cleaver gets pulled from his head, like after the first chop that, you know, essentially kills him from last minute. So I'm guessing everything else would have been some kind of, you know, dummy, some kind of foam, latex or whatever, you know, a mold of this Gerald guy, just a Rorschach, can then hack away at.
That always fascinates me when they have scenes in movies where it clearly has to be a prop head and it's not the actor itself, for you know, whether it's stunts or a death scene or anything like that, special effects. Just, you know, the craftsmanship that has to go into making something look like not just a human, but a human who is being seen in other parts of the movie up on a enormous movie screen. You've got to make it look exactly like that person. And, you know, a lot of times it's not just sitting there, it's moving, you know. And sometimes movies do a good job, like Terminator 2 is coming to mind. And sometimes they do a bad job, like another Schwarzenegger movie, Total Recall, where they don't do such a good job.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on, before we cut back to the Rorschach and the psychiatrist in the room?
That's what I had for the butchering scene.
Okay.
Butchering part, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't, talked about it, you know, more than is enjoyable. As far as, I think the it comes out of voiceover, and once we're, you know, we're back in the room with him and the psychiatrist, and we see Rorschach say, "Warm blood splash my face," and for some reason that line I feel like would have sounded better in the voiceover. Mm-hmm. You know, especially like we see the blood splattering and stuff and hitting him, like, but just seeing him in the room, that's not a line that sounds normal coming out of someone's mouth, like seeing him say that, those words. But I think it would have been fine as voiceover. Then we get the the core line that sort of justifies Rorschach's existence when he says, you know, whatever was left of Walter Kovacs died that night with that little girl. From then on, there was only Rorschach. And, you know, as we've kind of discovered through the first half of this movie, you know, Rorschach can kind of be a piece of shit sometimes, but at least it's good that he has a zero tolerance policy kind of when it comes to people like this Gerald that we just saw him take care of. And
yeah, and his I feel like when they were the close-up of him as he's saying those last few lines to the doctor, his eyes looked like they had a bit of a shine to them, and I wonder if it's they were trying to convey that, you know, he was almost starting to tear up about his life path ever since that moment when Walter Kovacs closed his eyes and then, you know, reopened them as Rorschach.
Mm. Could be. I kind of like that idea. And maybe even more, like, if there's any sadness or if he was on the verge of tears, it's because he couldn't save the little girl, that kind of thing. That he, mm-hmm. We talked about it last week about him promising the parents, you know, to find the man or find the girl and bring her back safe. So it could just be, you know, he'd been talking about this whole situation to the psychiatrist and maybe just thinking about that night, you know, maybe if there is any like glassy eyed consistency to his eyes, maybe that would be why. But mm-hmm. either way, I like that idea.
Yeah, it could be either way. I could see that too.
Well, I think it, you know, like when he tilts his head down, he goes off of looking Dr. Long directly in the eyes.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, at that point, I think that even cements that a little bit further. I think because I mean, you know, you know, I've certainly been in a state where, you know, I've been starting to tear up or something talking with someone, and yeah, I would look away.
Sure.
So that way, I try to not tear up as much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sure.
And we get just more great dialogue with the lines, you know, God didn't kill that little girl. Fate didn't butcher her. Destiny didn't feed her to those dogs. If God saw what any of us did that night, he didn't seem to mind. And from then on, I knew God doesn't make the world this way. And I want to talk about those before, you know, the next little bit. Because I like the points that he makes about God, fate, and destiny. Mm-hmm. And they're like three concepts that I think humans tend to hide behind in order to remove responsibility for their actions. So he's just cutting through all of that and stating that it's, you know, black and white, a again, like, it all comes down, you know, comes back to that with Rorschach, that it's good or evil, and it's not an abstract reason why that little girl's dead. It's because a human being made a choice. And so I think that's ultimately, that is what Rorschach is out there fighting against, is because humans can decide whether or not to do something like this with the little girl, or, you know, whoever else he's going after. So,
yeah, and you really answered kind of my question. I kind of wondered, you know, I my note was, it feels weird that Rorschach is talking about God. Okay. But with you saying that, that makes so much more sense.
Oh.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, I think his next little bit about saying we do is kind of backs up my point, I think, about, you know, it's the human beings that make these choices. So.
And hence our end of the show, who watches the Watchmen? We do.
Yeah.
You know, that's the other big role in this whole situation we are in, that you need to keep an eye on everything,
yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah. We gotta watch the Watchmen.
Well, and also it's interesting that there's, you know, the major character of the movie, Dr. Manhattan, who, you know, is essentially a god among men, who, mm-hmm. because of the way he perceives time, you know, in essence, he knows what everyone's fate and destiny is, because he's living all moments in time at the same time. So it's also interesting that they brought in Rorschach using the word God, fate, and destiny, when, you know, all three of those words, very interesting, can tie into Dr. Manhattan as well.
Hmm. I like that too. It's also, it makes me think of, I mean, just because you brought, you know, Dr. Manhattan up, it also, does someone like Rorschach blame, you know, like a Dr. Manhattan a little bit, because he didn't do anything to, you know, find this little girl. He certainly has the power to make sure no little kids, you know, go missing. And, you know, if he wanted to, he could, you know, could have found out who did it, and that kind of thing, before, you know, it was too late. So it could also be, I don't know, resenting even people like Dr. Manhattan.
That's an interesting point, because it goes back to the scene with the comedian, when the comedian kills the woman in Vietnam. Sure. And he says to Dr. Manhattan, hey, you could have changed the gun to flowers. You could have stopped the bullets. You didn't do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone like Rorschach, who sees the world totally in black and white, I could see him definitely having a major problem with Dr. Manhattan and wondering, why don't you just stop every bad person who's doing what are clearly morally reprehensible things? Why are these things happening when you exist?
Mm-hmm. It's not something I ever really considered before, but yeah, I
didn't either till right now, as yeah. I was saying it. Yeah.
So then I guess the interview ends with, we see the door, I forget how exactly it plays out, but the door opens and there's the letter and numbers B115 on the door. Did you guys notice that?
I did, and I was wondering if it meant something, just because they clearly, you know, it seemed like the camera was focused on that door sign for some reason.
Yeah, and I certainly didn't do any research behind it, but I certainly noted it.
I did, and
over to the side, though, it also, there's SILE, maybe for silent.
I think so, yeah, yeah, I assume that too.
Yeah. Okay, so what did you find, oh great Travis?
Damn it, I found nothing. And it's so frustrating, because just like the beginning of this, of not the, I guess the beginning of the prison sequence, we see Rorschach's like processing number, the 62186, and I found nothing on that. And now I found nothing on B115, and it's really frustrating, because, you know, earlier in the movie, we had 3001 was on Eddie Blake's door, and then the one gets knocked off by the coffee cup, and then it becomes 300, which, you know, I think is a pretty clear reference to, like, it being a Zack Snyder thing with 300. You know, I don't think that's that big of a secret, or, you know. So here, you know, yeah, like you said, like, it's pretty clear. I mean, someone made a choice to put those numbers on that door. And yeah, I couldn't find other than finding 115 in relation to how much money Pyramid Transnational made last year that we'll see in a couple weeks. Cause it's like 115.47 million, I think. But I can't imagine that's, you know, was the intended connection. So I think it's just a random number as far as the movie goes. If it has a meaning, then it's probably only a meaning to the, you know, people who built the second set decorators, you know.
Oh, how about this? All right, I got an idea, which is probably completely wrong, but what if 115, so 1138 is the big Star Wars number.
Okay.
The difference between 3 and 8 is 5.
Mm.
So 115 instead of 1138.
You're my kind of guy, Eric. I think we think alike, because I had a pretty crazy theory about that other number. But
I find it really odd that as Dr. Long, you know, is exiting this room, he chooses to tell the door guard that
yes.
he can't help Rorschach,
yes.
which, A, it's like you're giving up now. You've already made your decision that he's beyond help. B, you're telling this guard, and C, you're doing so like within earshot of the patient. Like,
yep, absolutely.
Just starting to question how good of a psychiatrist that Dr. Long is.
Well, also, I think when he said, I can't help him, I think he really means to say, I won't help him. You know, I think he's giving up, you know?
Right.
Well, you did indicate last week how he is taking medication himself.
Yeah.
So, that right there. Well, not that that's a horrible, awful thing, but
yeah, but usually you don't keep your medication like on the table in front of you, in front of the interviewee.
Do you guys get into the differences between the movie and the comic?
Yeah, I tend to say in the book way too often.
Okay, I'll take it for you this week, today's episode, if you want me to.
Please,
there are some differences between in the book. And the movie, first of all, great casting. The doctor looks exactly like he does in the comic. I mean, just absolutely incredible casting that they found someone that looks exactly like him. So in the book, the way that Rorschach kills the guy is different. He handcuffs him to the pipe, covers him in gas, hands him a saw, lights a match, and tells him, you're not going to make it out in time if you try to saw through those cuffs, implying you're going to have to saw your arm off. And then he goes outside and he watches the building burn down with the guy inside of it. So he doesn't chop him up in the book, which is interesting that they added a much more graphic, you know, death for him in the movie. And then he says that the whole closing his eyes and then Rorschach opening them in the book, he says it happens when he's actually butchering the dogs, not when he's killing the guy as well. But then as far as the doctor goes, in the book, the doctor is visibly shaken by Rorschach telling him all this, similar to how he is here, but the doctor stays sitting down at the table, and Rorschach then is led out of the room and leaves the doctor behind, as opposed to the doctor leaving Rorschach, and he does not say, you know, I can't help him or anything like that.
Right.
And then, of course, you know, I mean, it's a movie, you have to cut certain things, obviously, but in the book it leads to a whole subplot of the doctor becoming obsessed with Rorschach and eventually breaking up with his wife because he's so obsessed with Rorschach, which obviously they didn't have time for in the movie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's pretty different between the two.
Right. Yeah, we did talk a lot about that last week, and just thinking that, you know, moving the or I guess removing the eyes closing and opening with the dogs, and then kind of moving that to, you know, basically this minute, you know, or after the killing of the man, and then changing the way he does it so it is more graphic, but it's more hands-on. We came to the conclusion that, you know, it makes more sense for Rorschach. Rorschach needed to carry out the execution, because it didn't make much sense to us that he came to that like realization by killing the dogs. You know, it was that's not a climactic moment, you know, and it that I think would have seemed weird if that was kind of the takeaway. But let's see what else we got.
Yeah, that's all my notes. We covered everything I had.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, actually, I have another note. It's not in relation to this week, last week, or it's actually from the week before when Rorschach is being like apprehended by the police, and it's just something that I noticed in doing like research for I think this week that it hit me like, oh, I didn't notice this before, so I definitely want to mention that. So going back to when they try to take the mask off of Rorschach, and the cop says, you know, he stinks. I noticed then that the officer's name was O'Brien. You can see it if you're going slow enough. You can see it on, you know, on his name tag, and it's the same cop, same actor from when Rorschach is investigating Eddie Blake's apartment, and the cop that Rorschach like knocks out and does the shushing thing. That's Officer O'Brien. So it's just same, like I said, same cop, same actor. So I wanted to point that out because I had no idea that it was the same person in both places. So I don't know if the other cop that was with O'Brien, Kirkpatrick, I think. I don't know if he was also here in the in this scuffle. But
now, if it hadn't been the same actor,
right?
That would have been totally understandable.
The
O'Brien on the police force,
right? So yeah, like I said, doesn't have anything to do with these last 2 weeks, but I definitely wanted to point it out since I noticed it. But well, all right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Flash Gordon Minute?
Sure. Minute Movie by Minute podcast, just like Watchmen Minute. The classic 1980 Flash Gordon movie. My co-host Brad Mendenhall was previously a guest here with you guys. We do three episodes a week where we delve into it, the incredible backstory, the script, the acting, the costumes, the colors, the scenery, of course, the Queen soundtrack. You know, we're two people, we love the movie, but, you know, we're not afraid to, you know, see it for its flaws. We always have a guest on. We've had a few bonus interviews as well with some people involved with the movie. So if you are a fan of campy Flash Gordon, please come check us out.
And now the set is complete with you appearing on our show.
Yes. We've had you both were on our show, and now we both will be on your show. And so, yeah, the circle is complete.
Brad will be on in a few weeks. He hasn't been on yet.
Oh, okay. I thought he had already been on. Okay,
that did seem weird.
He's on the schedule. I don't think so. But and then I was like, oh, I'm going to feel really bad if we have had him. And then I couldn't remember having him on. I was like, I better check that. And did you say where they could find you, all your at Twitter and all that stuff?
Okay. We are anywhere you get your podcast, Flash Gordon Minute. We have our website also. You can get it directly from us there. Growler Media, Growler, growlermedia.com/Flash Gordon. We're on Facebook, Flash Gordon Minute Listeners Vortex. We're on Twitter, Flash Gordon Pod.
Awesome.
Yeah, so, Eric, you think you'll be able to come back for another day?
I love to spend time in prison with Rorschach. Tomorrow's episode is the specific minute that I requested to be on for, so I am very much looking forward to tomorrow.
I wonder why. Why would that be? Is there something that Rorschach says, maybe? Okay, so yeah, that's minute 107. Come up tomorrow, Tuesday. We'll have Eric back. And until then, who watches the Watchmen?
We do.
Watchmen are over.